Welcome to Creating Windows, Not Bars, a monthly show on Justice Radio, on WMPG with your hosts, Mackenzie Kelly and Linda Small. This is part two of Doing Decades in Prison, with our guests, Sean Libby and Darlene George, talking about their extraordinary experiences while incarcerated and doing community service work and outreach.
But first, a little information about us. I'm Mackenzie Kelly, a recovery coach and peer mentor coordinator of Healthy Acadia and the program director of Reentry Sisters.
And I'm Linda Small, a project coordinator with the Maine Prisoner Advocacy Coalition and executive director of Reentry Sisters, an organization with a trauma-informed and gender approach to reentry support.
The past several months, Linda and I have been working together to provide support and community for justice-impacted women as they reunify with their families, look for work and housing, and complete their educational aspirations. Our show explores safety and community and asks what it's like for people to come home after serving time in prison. Today, we're talking about how incarcerated men and women contribute to society, make a difference in our communities, and support themselves through meaningful work in outside organizations. Sean, I know you started to kind of touch on it, but can you tell us a little bit about where you work and how you were able to create that opportunity for yourself?
I work now for, like I said earlier, on Jobs for the Future and their Center for Justice and Economic Advancement. These opportunities came about, I know from our standpoint here at MSP, guys started opening the door up for getting their undergraduate degrees and then going into their master's degrees and even PhD programs, and just realizing after a while that it's really tough. You know, Pell Grants, those sorts of things that cover undergraduate do not cover graduate studies. It's hard to get funding for when you're incarcerated. So we started kind of asking questions to the administration about what can we do? What avenues can we open up? And it really started with a lot, you know, different guys. Like I said, it's not just one of the things I always like to say. Darlene and I are here talking to you, but I always like to say we're not the exception to the rule. We're more the rule than most people would think. There's a lot of people, men and women, throughout the DOC and DOCs around the country that are doing incredible work, that are doing incredible things, that are just trying to better themselves to go home. You know, we have some of these people who are working with like community organizations, and these community organizations would say, like, maybe not hire you full time, or like, hey, we have a deliverable and we would pay you a stipend if you help us to, you know, in the next 90 days, we have to do X, Y, and Z. And what we pay you $500, $1,000, $200, $2,000, whatever, if you help us with that deliverable. So we started kind of asking those questions, and it started being like, yeah, you can do this stipended work. And then the stipended work turned into like, what about internships and things of that nature? They said, yeah, you can, you know, we have to vet everything. So everything, if you're applying for something, you have to go make sure the proper people are made aware so they can look at it. And then that's kind of what I did. I applied for this summer internship at Jobs for the Future and went through the whole process like anybody else, interviewed multiple times with different people, and was lucky enough to be chosen to work. And now I've been lucky enough to have that internship extended. They technically got over in August and they wanted to keep me around, so they kept me around. And now it looks like there's the opportunity, and the DOC's open to it. These opportunities for, like Darlene's doing, actual work being kept on. It's, you know, it's a process of getting to this point. You know, a lot of people listening might maybe struggle with the fact that somebody incarcerated is working a real job and getting paid an actual wage. But if you really think about it, what it's doing for me and for people who get these opportunities, you know, there's so many hurdles in the way of people getting released from prison. So many people get released from prison without a job. So finding a job is a hurdle. If you have a job before you get out, that hurdle's gone. If you're making actual money, the average person, I read this in The Guardian, there was an article, the average person leaves prison in this country with over $13,000 in debt from court fees, restitution, you know, all the stuff that comes along with going through the court process. So if you're making an actual wage, that hurdle is gone. You're not getting that. You're actually going to have a meaningful job with a meaningful wage when you leave prison. These are all just hurdles that are in the way of people getting out of prison that are not there if you have a wage. One of the big things, how many men and women in this country are parents of minor children? And if you're paying and you're meaningful support in your children's lives by making, instead of making $50 a month working 12-hour days in a kitchen or something, making a meaningful wage that you can support your family. Because most people, most men and women in prison don't want to be deadbeat parents. They want to be a meaningful part of their parent, of their children's lives, even if it's monetary. They want to do that. So this is another way that this, and we also like they garnish our wages to kind of help, you know, like the room and board type deal. We're now taxpayers. We're not draining on taxes. We're also paying some of our wages to house ourselves here. So it's only helping with the process. You know, those are the kind of things. I mean, I could go on and on about what the benefits are, the positives are, more than just on a personal level, on a societal level, what having people with meaningful jobs and meaningful wages actually really means.
So is it possible for other men in the facility that you're at to do the same?
It's one of the things that, you know, there are other guys here. Like I said, you know, Darlene will chime in here. She's paving the way as well with an actual job. There are other guys here who are doing fellowships, internships. I'm working an actual, I know there's another guy that'll work an actual job. And it's another thing, again, this is like where the DOC comes in, right? They're giving us these opportunities and letting us go out there and try to get these things. But they're also like, hey, we need to start developing policy around this. And you know, we want your input so they can start not just having one or two Sean's or Darlene's or other people that are doing it. They can start really broadening this out and opening the door up for more and more people to have this ability. So again, it's just like we have these people with our Randy Liberty, the commissioner in place, and the Ben Beals and the Matt Magnusons and the people in the DOC who are willing to look at things completely different than we ever have and opening these doors up for more and more people. It's going to start off slow. It's going to start off with, you know, a handful of people doing it. And that's the thing with, like, I can't speak for Darlene, but I feel like I can a little bit. We've talked enough about it. Like, having the trust that the DOC puts in us to go out there and do these things, to open these doors up for people. And that's what we both talked about this so far. Is like a lot of what we're trying to do is trying to, yes, create these opportunities for ourselves, but then open the door for others so that others can take advantage of these amazing opportunities that are presented to us by the DOC.
Yeah, and that's so important. Thank you, Sean. And Darlene, how about you please tell us a little bit about what you're doing and how that opportunity came about for you?
Oh, well, that's a nice little story in itself. So right now, my title is grants manager. I am a grants manager for a health place. I work directly with my CEO, Robin Winslow, and Jacinta Hunt, to name a few. My duties are, but are not limited to, overseeing the grants that are implemented according to the operational and financial needs of the organization, keeping the relevant staff informed about upcoming deadlines and deliverables. I work directly with accounting, reporting, and administrative departments. I monitor paperwork and other related documents connected with grant-funded programs. I maintain records of all payments and receivables and prepare monthly reports. I schedule training to the new staff for their onboarding. I assist Jacinta Hunt in her peer recovery department when and if needed. And I work very closely with Robin and OSIS to maintain the integrity of the computer system. So funny when you was talking about recoveries and recovery coaches. So when Jacinta Hunt was here, she was my recovery. We kept contact the whole entire time. She's been out every day, just about. She fought for this opportunity for me. She went to Augusta. She did this. She linked up with our director of women's services, which was Amanda Wolford, and they talked about it. They talked with my CEO, which is Robin Winslow. They actually had to have lawyers get involved to make sure that it was okay for someone like me that's incarcerated to work there. And she actually changed her policy so that I can work there. So it was a whole process. So just naming them. So yes, it's so important to not just maintain the communication with your people when they leave, but out of that little mustard seed of me believing in her, this is what came back tenfold, was that she wanted somebody that she knew she could trust and somebody she knew that her boss would be able to trust. And that's where I came in at. And that's where this whole thing came about. So not only were they involved, but then you have, again, our wardens, our deputy warden and Randall Liberty, that goes to bat for us and say, okay, we're going to put distrust in you. And so now you have all these people that have all these, they banking on you to do the right thing and to not mess up in no way at all with the computers and just breaking policies and things of that nature. So where we are happy to have the job that we can make sure that our families are taken care of, we're giving back to the state, we're paying some going back to this facility. But again, like Sean said, it's about the next person. So if I do good, she can do good. And this is why when I'm going to work, coming down here to my little section, every morning they're like, "Oh my God, Miss Darlene, you look so pretty," because I am able to wear dress shirts instead of just a regular blue shirt. So when they see me, they're like, "Okay, so we're not going to come down there. We're not going to bother you," because they want me to do well. They want me to progress. They consistently asking me, "Are you okay today? You did, how you do today? What's going on at work today?" So they ask these questions because they want to make sure that I'm doing good, because they want the same opportunities. So I make sure on a daily basis that I'm doing everything I'm supposed to do, because it's not only just about me, it's about who's behind me and who's waiting to come in, to slide in behind me. So it this work is so important. And just not for the monetary reasons, it's for all the other reasons that come along with it, that I'm carrying my sisters with me every day while I'm working. So it's like, okay, don't do that wrong thing. Do all the correct things so that this person can come in behind you. Just like Sean said, like, it's not just about us, it's about all the rest of the people that want the same opportunity that we have.
That's really fantastic. So what I'm hearing from both of you is that you must be role models for other men and women, right? That are living in the same circumstances. And do you think that your accomplishments bring hope to those people around you?
Well, I know that they do, because I have conversations with the women on a daily basis. And, we talk and they tell me, "Well, what can we do? What do you do that we can do so that we can get into some of the things that you're doing? How can we help? Okay, if I'm a level blah 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 3 or whatever, how can I get to that 4 so that I can get into some of these activities?" And then some of them are actually saying, "Okay, can I sit down with you to do like a behavioral plan so that I can start doing and acting in the right way so that I can start having some of these opportunities presented to me?" So it does matter what you do, how you do it, and when you do it. Whereas, see, I'm kind of old school, so I'm fair and I'm very firm, very firm. So when they come to me, they know is I'm not sugarcoating anything. So, but they still come because they're looking for somebody to tell them the truth, somebody that they know is not going to mislead them in the wrong way. And they're looking for someone to say, "Hey, you know what you've been doing, okay, and then this is what you got to do to get where you need to go." So yeah, they do. We talk all the time. And so yes, we are like the role models for people. Not that we asked for it, but it came to us. And so you got to do the right thing with it.
Yeah, thank you so much, Darlene, for your mentorship. And just for our listeners, the level system is a way for corrections to monitor behavior. And so you can move up at a level the more responsibility you show, or you can move down a level if you lack responsibility and break the rules. You are listening to Creating Windows, Not Bars, Justice Radio with your hosts, Linda Small and Mackenzie Kelly. Today, we are talking with Darlene George and Sean Libby about their amazing work and the challenges of living inside Maine's correctional system. We explore what it's like to carry the weight of a long sentence and the extraordinary efforts they make to engage and contribute in meaningful ways to Maine communities. So, Sean, how about you? What is the impact on everything that you're doing have on the men that are around you?
I think kind of like Darlene alluded to, it it just shows people what's possible, right? I talk to a lot of people. I have a job right now inside the facility as well, and it's kind of a centralized place where I deal with people all day long. And some people get a little frustrated. They'll say it's kind of messed up that only a certain few get to have these opportunities to make real money. And when you explain to them, like, listen, what we're trying to do is prove that it can work and open the door up. And they say, oh, yeah, that's what you're really trying to make it so that more and more people can do it. And you say, absolutely, that's our goal. That's what we're focusing on. Then they start seeing it differently and they start saying, oh, that's amazing. I really thank you for that. Really appreciate that. And it's just showing to me, like, just going about your business every day and just kind of living it, right? And just showing people what can be done if you stay out of trouble, if you go to school, if you do the positive things and stay on that track, the different doors are going to open up for you. And just kind of letting people know that and trying to, I've talked to a lot of people who end up getting into school, end up going through the college program, and just showing, just again, it's like leading by example. I don't try to put myself out there as just somebody and say, everybody look at me, but it's like I can just live my life every day and keep doing the things that I'm doing and having conversations with people. That's the big part of it, is just talk to people and let them know what's going on and then how you got to where you're at. And yeah, I've been here for 26 years, but I've also, stayed without any write-ups for that time. And I've gone through college and I've done all these different things. That's how you can earn that trust and earn that respect from the people that make the decisions. And I've seen a lot of guys, not because of me, but a lot of guys over time who just, it happens. People mature. That's a big part of it, right? You come to prison, you're young. Some people act a fool when they're young, and then something turns around and it's just that same thing. It's no different in prison than society, where how many people at 40 years old make the same decisions they make at 18, 19, 20 years old? It's the same thing in prison. People end up, most of the time, they start maturing, they start growing up, they start making different decisions, they start thinking about their future and about how they're going to get out. And if I can be a person they can look at and say, he did it, and look at the opportunities it's created and he's helping to create, that's what it's all about, as far as I'm concerned. Like, yeah, it used to be about when I was younger, how do I get, even when I was, I'm not doing the wrong things, but like, how do I get a job that helps me, earn the best living in here, be more comfortable, save some money for the future? And now it's more about how can I create opportunities for other people? That's what it really comes down to. Yes, I'm getting these opportunities, but it's like, how do I create opportunities for others? And I think people see that, and they can see what's possible as long as they keep working hard and doing what they need to do.
That's fantastic, Sean. I guess what I'm getting from both of you is that you're really a microcosm of the macrocosm, right? We're all the same. We're all human. We're all people. We all make mistakes. Geez, some of us get caught, some of us don't. The reality is that there are many people who have broken the law or committed acts of violence who are not incarcerated. And so for us to stigmatize those who are doesn't make any sense, because it also doesn't take into account the multiple acts of violence, political violence, violence by corporations in this country that do a lot more damage to people and families and communities. So I really appreciate you pointing out how much that you're doing for others. It's really astounding, quite frankly. And I appreciate hearing about that. Our listeners might want to know what you would each of you suggest for organizations who are looking for qualified workers and how they might hire people who are currently inside the prison system. What does that look like? What should they do? Darlene, we can start with you.
What I would like to tell everybody is that if you're looking for qualified workers, we are just as qualified as anyone else. There are people incarcerated obtaining their bachelor's, their master's, their PhDs. You have people facilitating classes for colleges, collaborating with outside organizations, advocating for policies, and fighting for social equality. And a lot of times, the thought is that if you're incarcerated, you're not very smart. But on the contrary, you will find some of the smartest people behind bars. And if anyone is interested in hiring anyone from the Women's Center, you can contact Amanda Wolford, the Director of Women's Services, or Deputy Warden Chris Arbor for our services. But what it looks like for us is everything is a learning curve. And just like me, I'm the test pilot. So if it can work for me, it can work for other people too, as well in here. It's just a point of logistics And that biggest thing around here is the security piece part of it. But we have a very willing and open warden, commissioner. Everybody is willing to take chances on these things. So now is the right time for these opportunities to come about.
Thank you, Darlene.
You're welcome.
What about you, Sean? What about what's going on with the men? How can we get more men employed?
I think a lot of it comes down to kind of like what Darlene said too, is if people are interested, they can reach out to Commissioner Randy Liberty, Associate Commissioner Tony Cantillo, Laura Rodas, who's been integral in a lot of this at the DOC level. All these, they're the ones who are making the decisions and really putting themselves out there. And to some extent, they're taking risks and they're putting themselves out there saying, we believe that this is the right thing to do. And then there are also people taking risks. I work for JFF. It's a risk somewhere for somebody to say, we're going to hire the guy in prison. Same with Darlene. You have people working for the Alliance for Higher Education in prison. Places like that, I would encourage people, look at it from both angles. If you're interested in trying to figure out how you could hire people and give people opportunities while they're still incarcerated, reach out to the DOC, but also maybe reach out to the companies that are already doing it. Because they're the ones also taking a risk, and they're really paving the way on that end in the community as well. So, jobs for the future. I can't. I'm sorry. I'm spacing on where Darlene works. I'm sorry, but like I said, Alliance for Higher Education in Prison is another one that has. They have a woman down at the reentry center. They have a man here who are both fellows working with them and getting paid real wages. So we're just reaching out to places that are doing it, I think, is also another way to get both ends of it. See what the DOC is thinking and saying, but also what the employers are doing, the risks they took, how they had to maybe change, like Darlene said, some hiring practices. That's key for to open the door for people. But also, when you hear from the employers, you're going to hear the stories of the work and what people are capable of. And I think that's what people really need to hear. Because when they reach out, they're going to hear the stories of what people bring to the table who are incarcerated. Like Darlene said, there's a lot of really intelligent, really educated, and really hardworking people inside prisons around this country. And you're going to hear the stories of what they bring to the table if you reach out to the employers. I think that would be key. There's a lot of, I feel it, I've talked to a lot of people, there's that imposter syndrome feeling sometimes when you feel like, am I getting the good feedback at school because I'm the guy in prison? Am I getting the good feedback at work because I'm the guy in prison? Well, I've been told multiple times that I'm getting the good feedback because I'm doing good work, that my work stands on its own. So that's what I think, reaching out to the DOC, but reaching out to the people who are taking the risk on their end and listening to what they're doing and what they're getting from it. I think that would be key. Finding out what people bring to the table would be really key for people looking to open up opportunities.
Yeah, that's a fantastic point, Sean. These organizations are taking a risk. And if it wasn't working, you know what? You two wouldn't be employed anymore, and neither would those other folks. So that speaks volume about your integrity and your skills. So I'll turn it over to Mackenzie.
In our remaining few minutes, is there anything that each of you want our listeners to know about you or about incarcerated people or anything in general? Anything else you want to say?
What I would want people to know is that just because we're incarcerated, don't count us out. We are mothers, we are daughters, and we're just looking to re-enter into society without being a burden on the state or our families or our friends. We are employable, we are smart, we will work, like we will do work just like anybody else. We just want someone to extend us a hand, to say, give us a chance.
Give us a
Just give us a
chance.
chance. Just give us a chance.
Yeah, I would say something very similar. Most people, I think, in society, I knew before I ever came to prison. Again, I was only 18, but I had a couple different jobs. And I think, when I talk to people I know, it's very similar to this day. Yeah, there's a lot of people that find jobs online or in the help ads, if those are still a thing. I don't know. Go to interview and do it that way. But a lot of things is working and people who know people and somebody giving somebody a shot. And I think that's key for people getting out of prison is a lot of people who came here. It's not an excuse. Believe me, I'm not making excuses for people. But a lot of people just haven't had that chance yet. Haven't had somebody give them that opportunity to reach out and say, here, I have this opportunity for you. And when it comes down to it, I mean, the numbers are roughly, I believe, like 95% of people in prison are going to get out and they're going to come back to society. And it's just that simple fact of, do you want somebody coming back as prepared as they can be? You know, we can't focus on recidivism rates as the only measure of success for prisons. It's bad. I mean, roughly two-thirds of people end up back in prison. But we can't even if you say you do a program or people that work, you know, 60% less likely to go back to prison, we can't just judge it on that. How are they living in society? Are they thriving? Are they just living paycheck to paycheck and barely making it by? Or are they in society, you know, really thriving and being really extremely productive members and not just somebody who barely makes it by? Giving people these kinds of opportunities is going to help them get out, thrive in society, and be a productive member of society. And you have so many people who want to do good things. Like I said earlier, we're not the exception to the rule. There are so many people throughout the Maine Department of Corrections and around this country who can offer so much to companies who want to hire them, but also to the community as a whole. And they want to get out and they want to prove that and they want to show that they are better than the worst mistake they ever made and they want to give back. And I think, you know, I would hope the listeners can understand that and believe that there are a lot of good people in prison who just want an opportunity to show people that they are better than what they are here for.
Thank you so much for that, Sean. I think that was such an important humanizing point to get away from just the numbers, because a recidivism number doesn't represent people, right? It doesn't represent people's lives. And to take a closer look at the markers of stability of a purposeful and meaningful life, I think is so much more important. I appreciate you both for speaking for yourselves and your fellow brothers and sisters, and for sharing your incredible stories with us and your vision of creating career opportunities that foster humanization and self-sufficiency inside Maine's prison system, and that alleviates the burdens from taxpayers and on families as well. So in coming shows, we will explore public safety, the unique stigma justice-impacted women face, and the experiences and struggles of returning citizens to create meaningful and productive lives.
And next week, please join Representative Charlotte Warren and Zoe Bokus on Justice Radio to learn what can be done to redefine and reimagine equity, restoration, and justice through legislative action. Visit the Justice Radio show page on WMPG.org for archived episodes aired on WMPG and WERU. And a big thank you to Samuel James for his gift of music that opens and closes each episode in our series.
That's a wrap.
Thank you.